stimulation for your brain. This is the Lisa Wexler Show on WICC 600.
Joining us now is the Reverend Stephen Anthony Cousin Jr., who is a pastoral leader in our community. He is the proud pastor of Bethel African Methodist Episcopal Church in New Haven, Connecticut, AME, and he seeks to empower the congregation to ascend to newer and higher heights. He comes from a big extended family. He has parents. He has five siblings. He is married and has two sons, and he was quoted in a piece in the Connecticut Insider of Hearst Media as talking about welcoming the debate on qualified immunity. Quote, for me, it's not a deal breaker if it's actually not in the bill, where it can actually be referred back to the task force for them to further review it. However, Reverend Cousins was very much in favor of a lot of the other reforms. Now, as we know, the qualified immunity piece of it did pass, but it has left some hard feelings, and there are still articles being written about the fact that it may yet be reformed again in the next legislative session. But in the meantime, Governor Lamont signed it with a flourish on Friday afternoon and also commended the police for their role, obviously, in fighting crime. Reverend Cousin, hello. Welcome to the Lisa Wexler Show today. I'm delighted that you're on. Hello. Good morning.
Thank you very much for having me. Thank you, and good morning to you.
So Reverend Cousin, first of all, tell me a little bit about what it's like being a clergyman right now in the time of COVID. How are you managing your congregation? How many people, if any, are coming back to church on a Sunday? You know, just tell me a little bit about what it's like for you.
Well, you know, fortunately for us, we're able to really get ahead of the curve, so to speak, in terms of the pandemic, where we actually shut down our church on March 15th of this year. And we went strictly to just doing Facebook Live, streaming our services online with the skeleton crew. Normally, we would have, you know, close to 150 to 200 people in worship service. And now we just have less than five people who stream the service from the sanctuary. And we went completely virtual. And so we've been doing that since March. And we're asking ourselves the question now, when are we coming back? But I have a congregation who is of the at-risk population. Mm-hmm. And so my members do not feel comfortable even coming back inside the sanctuary until there is a proven vaccine.
Really? That's sort of the consensus, huh? No vaccine,
yes,
no services. Wow. Wow.
Yes, ma'am. They are comfortable where, you know, going online from the comfort of their houses and just watching the service as is. They are in no rush, as I've been told on several occasions, to come back inside the church until this pandemic has been officially declared over.
So let me ask you this, Reverend Cousin. You know, I saw that there was a recent survey, and I'm wondering how accurate you think this is, that showed that only one in four Black Americans, only 25% of Black Americans, were willing at this point to take a vaccine for COVID, period end. There might be a lot of reasons for that, historical distrust of the government, maybe some of them subscribe to anti-vax theories, but it was shockingly low. It was shockingly low nationwide. I think it was only one out of two white Americans, but it was only one out of four Black Americans willing to take a vaccine. Among your congregation and your community, is it that low?
It may be lower, where I've said to my congregation that, you know, even with the vaccine were to be released, I think they're saying sometime in the middle of next year, ideally, or the end of, you know, 2021, we're looking at it where we don't have to be the first ones to take it. Let's see what happens first. We're the first group that take it. Let's see what the results are. And you, just like with the reopening, where, you know, the state of Connecticut started to reopen in May, and they actually allow churches, instead of having 50 people in a worship service, they increased that number to 100. And we did a wait-and-see approach. Let's see who's going to do it first, and then let's see what the effects are going to be, the results, and then we'll make our decision based off of, you know, that new data. So just because there's going to be a vaccine, we don't know if it's safe. We don't know if it's going to be proven. So we're willing to wait till we get all the data out there before we make our determination.
So you guys do not want to be the guinea pigs on the front lines of any kind of any experimentation with getting back to normal, whether it be showing up or taking a vaccine.
Ideally, no, that is not my preference, and that's what I'm here for my congregation.
Okay. Well, I'm just, you know, it's when it's proven, do you think that people in your community will take it, or do you think that it's really going to be an uphill battle? Because, you know, because you say on the one hand, not you personally, but all of us are saying on the one hand, we're going to want to get life back to normal when, quote unquote, there's a vaccine. But it's not going to help unless enough people take it so that all of us are protected as a community.
Well, I think for us, we need to understand that life will never go back to the way it used to be.
Really?
I would think about it. After 9/11, we never really went back to, you know, pre-9/11. We always talk about pre-9/11 and post-9/11. We look at the stock crash of 2008, how we actually do banking regulations. That has changed since then. And now with this pandemic, now with the use of technology, how now we're using Zoom, we're using WebEx and other means of communication, how we did business as usual, we really just can't go back to the way things used to be, where even now, even after the vaccine, they're talking about not shaking hands or not hugging anybody. So that personal physical connection would really cease to exist, so to speak. And so I think that, to your point, if the vaccine is proven safe, there will be people readily to take it. But I think it's going to be more like, you know, with those taking the flu vaccine once a year, right, where you have those who take it and those who choose not to take it for whatever reason, whether it be religious beliefs or what have you. I think you're going to see that with this vaccine play out next year.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. And, of course, along with the vaccine, we're going to want to hopefully have good treatment for the disease. So the way people are willing to take a risk for flu, because they just are, some of them, they're just willing to say, oh, if I get the flu, I'll get over it. Maybe we'll get to that point with a little luck where people will not feel like getting COVID-19 is a potential death sentence. But we don't know, because right now it is. You know, right now it still is. Right now the numbers are not great.
And you know, you see that all over the country, right? Where, remember, the Northeast used to be the epicenter, you know, of the world. Now that has moved to the South. And so we're asking ourselves the question, is it ever going to migrate back up north? Because it was funny, in the beginning of this pandemic, you had those from New York and Connecticut moving down to Florida.
Right.
To actually try to outbeat the pandemic. And now Florida rules, and now you see those from Florida and Georgia try to move back up to Connecticut and New York, try to avoid it. So I think it's going to just come in swings.
And it's going to come in swings. We're chatting with the Reverend Stephen Cousin Jr., pastor of the Bethel AME Church in New Haven. I have to tell you, listening to you, I'm getting sad, because I bemoaned some of the radical changes in our society after 9/11 that I know it was not politically correct to say, that I thought took a pendulum swing in a very fear-based direction and troubled me terribly. All the security measures for office buildings, or the way we were on this heightened sense of having to be afraid of everybody being a potential terrorist, that was very troubling to me when it became enshrined in our way of life. And this idea of not hugging people and much, you know, shaking hands and all of that, maybe it'll last a whole generation. Hopefully not forever. Hopefully I'll live and you'll live to see the other side of people feeling comfortable again. But I hear what you're saying. You're probably right. I'm just not ready to accept that yet.
And, you know, for me, it's heartbreaking where I still do funerals during this time. And I'll never forget my very first funeral that I've done during this season, where the wife was grieving over her husband. And when we actually, once the service was over, you could see how we wanted to hug each other.
Mm-hmm.
But we paused right then and there, knowing what it can entail. And that hurt for us to subconsciously begin to think about what could this mean just by physically touching somebody, even a time of grief where you just want to reach out and hug somebody, let them know it's going to be okay. And now that element has been stripped away from us for this time being. That was the most heartbreaking thing I had to endure during this season.
Yeah. And you can just imagine, and you're not the widow. You know, you're the one that wants to give the hug and comfort, but she's the one that needs to receive it in comfort. It's heartbreaking. Absolutely.
And that's what the Black church is predicated upon, you know, where the Black preacher is used to going in front of the doorsteps at the end of service and shaking everybody's hand as they're leaving the church and thanking them for worshiping with us, and or giving them a hug or maybe a kiss on the cheek, what have you. That's always been part of our culture.
Mm-hmm.
And now you take that away, and especially with the choirs, now they're saying that no choirs are able to sing.
Really?
Yes. And that's a big part of our tradition, music for our culture. And now you're saying we can't have a choir. What does that look like now in terms of reimagining church?
Not as fun, I can tell you right now. Not as good. It's a lot of it. You know what, Reverend Cousins? A lot of it's going to fall on you. Your preaching, your sermon's going to have to be better than ever to make up for the lack of that fantastic music.
And it's ironic where that's what I'm getting right now, when my members are saying, you're preaching better than before. And I think it's because, just like you said, now that's the only thing you have to rely on. Normally,
right.
You can rely on the music. And you can rely on others. Now it's, since it got scaled down to just you, and now you really have to raise your game up. It's like when a star goes down on a baseball team or a football team, and now next person up. I think that's what this is right now.
Oh, boy. You've got to raise your game. And plus, they're probably listening harder, right? Because you're the only game in the service. So they figure, okay, let me tune in. Oh, this guy's pretty good. Let me tune in. Wow. We got to go back
right
to singing. Singing is part of the joy of life. We're chatting with the Reverend Stephen Cousin of the AME Church in the Bethel AME Church in New Haven. So I actually asked you on, we only have a few minutes left, but I really wanted to get to know you. And this has been on my heart today about COVID. It's just after a weekend of this, and I didn't have a good dream over the weekend. I'm a little bit in a bit of a funk today about it. So I wanted to hear from you. So tell me a little bit now. So this was a big victory, I would imagine, for you and your advocacy to pass the police accountability reform bill. Is there anything that you didn't get passed in this bill that's still on the agenda, or is this now a question of seeing how well this bill will be executed and enforced?
Well, I think that's what it comes down to now, is implementation. And I think that for people on both sides, whether it be proponents or opponents of the bill, I think that we need to understand that passing the bill is the first step. That some of the language in the bill, I know that law enforcement had concerns with regarding use of force and regarding qualified or governmental immunity. The use of force policy would not be implemented until April. And I know that the Connecticut Post is revising the language right now. They put together a committee to actually begin to review that language and make the necessary corrections as they see fit. And the governmental immunity aspect of the bill won't be implemented until July of 2021. And I know that the Task Force for Police Accountability and Transparency has been, assigned the duty to look at that language to see if it needs to be strengthened, how would it be implemented, what do we need to add, take out, what have you, and that's still going to be up and debated in the legislature. So we still have a very long way to go in terms of what this bill could be, but I think passing the bill was the first step not the last step towards reform.
Okay. And Reverend Cousin, is there a message that you have that you want to tell me and our listeners about the relationship between the police and your African-American community in New Haven?
So, and, you know, from my perspective, I hold various, you know, titles. I sit on various boards within New Haven and the New Haven community at large. And for me, my heart sinks. Even though I do work with the New Haven Police Department and I have a great relationship with the New Haven Police Department, my heart still sinks when an officer is following me. Mm. And I'm asking myself the question, what's going to happen, and really, you know, be prepared for and so for us, it's always come down to a matter of trust. And we know that trust is both ways, where we have to be able to be willing to come to the table, just like law enforcement has to come to the table. We still call our officers whenever we are in need. At the end of the day, for us, we would just like to make sure that we're all treated equally. The law enforcement officer is given their respect, and those who they're policing are given respect as well. That's really all what we're seeking, advocating for. But this is not us trying to attack the police. This is not us trying to condemn the police. This is really us saying that, listen, we need each other. I'm still going to have to call on you when there is crime in our city. I'm still going to rely on you for other various aspects and services that you do provide. But we want to make sure that you can see me as you would see yourself. And that's really what this bill is trying to address.
Reverend Stephen Cousin, thank you so much for coming on the show today. We appreciate it. I hope you'll come back again. Of the Bethel AME Church in New Haven. It's been a pleasure to get to know you this morning, and I do look forward one day to meeting you in person.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been my pleasure, and I enjoyed your conversation with Brad Pitt, so I'm a huge fan, by the way.
You're a huge fan, right? Well, listen, he did cut his teeth with Robert Redford, so, I mean, he did learn from the best, right? Wasn't A River Runs Through It, or maybe I always thought of him as being a young Robert Redford in that movie. But, yeah, listen, the glamour isn't a bad thing, right? All those movie stars, it's a good thing. It's not a bad thing.
I really think so. I really enjoy it, and my favorite Brad Pitt movie, believe it or not, is A Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
Oh, that was very good, yeah. That was in its own way a heartbreaking movie, wasn't it? It was a sad movie.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it was.
Yeah. Thank you, Reverend. Thanks for coming on the show today. We'll have you back. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate you. Have a good day.
Thanks. The Reverend Stephen Cousins. We'll be right back. More of the Lisa Wexler Show coming up.